the kids who ask for forgiveness instead of begging for permission. Chapter 1. On the bright side, dying in a funeral home meant that cleanup and transportation would be easy at least. Nancy Wheeler refused to voice this thought as she stood in the wreckage of what once had been the Ferrier family funeral home lobby. The beam of her flashlight taking in the toppled velvet furniture, the thick layer of dust, and the rubble of the collapsed far wall. Robin did not share Nancy's restraint. If we die in here, convenient, Steve chipped in. Small blessings, Robin added. The pair of them moved past Nancy, pacing out onto the ruined green carpet. They're a couple of rays of sunshine, Jonathan muttered. He was scanning their surroundings with an appropriate level of weariness, considering the fact that the four of them had disregarded at least five condemned danger, caution danger, or do not enter danger signs on their way into the building. Come on, Nancy said. This way. Together, they picked their way toward the heavy oak door that hung off its top hinges just past the lobby. A bronze plaque gleamed anemically under a thick layer of grime. But Nancy didn't need to wipe it clean to know that it marked the room beyond as the funeral home's main office. The sturdy desk opposite the twin-cushioned chairs made that obvious. Jonathan padded to a stop behind her, walking carefully so his footsteps wouldn't echo off the somber, bare walls. Flashlights? He whispered. Flashlights, she agreed. Together, they flicked off their flashlights and waited. Waited. Nancy had been doing a lot of waiting in the 2 months since Vecna's earthquake had torn through Hawkins. Countless buildings like this one, which stood within spitting distance of the spider-webbing rift, had been partially or completely destroyed in the disaster. Countless lives had been destroyed as well. The days that had followed had shaken the town even further. A quarter of Hawkins's population had cut its losses and fled, even as the U.S. Army had rolled in to take their place, establishing an impassable perimeter under the guise of quarantine. Crossing that perimeter was nearly impossible, achievable only for the select few. Supply deliveries, case-by-case approvals, and very recently, humanitarian aid. And if the town's borders were rigorously protected, then the blockade around downtown Hawkins was practically draconian. What had once been the town's bustling hub was now a military no-fly zone. Within moments of their arrival in Hawkins, the military had zeroed in on the epicenter of Vecna's destruction, the spot where his four rifts had intersected. A radius of a few blocks had been drawn from that point, sketching out the circumference of what would become the military's own personal black hole. Whatever happened within that perimeter was a mystery to everyone in Hawkins, including Nancy. All that security, all that destruction. And despite everything, there hadn't been so much as a whisper of Vecna since Nancy had shot him in the disgusting, decaying head. He can't hide forever, she told herself. We'll find him. I'll find him. It sounded good as affirmations went. Nancy had given it a workout, put it through its paces. But affirmations were just words if you didn't put in the work to back them up. Which was why she, Jonathan, Steve, and Robin had broken into this half-collapsed funeral home in a disaster zone at 10 p.m. And it was why she was now blinking into the darkness, watching her unlit flashlight for the tiniest flicker of a glow. Was this the first time she'd found herself in a situation like this? No. Was it the first time she'd found herself in a situation like this month? No. But if she was going to find Vecna, and she was,